Hello and welcome to the Driving Mall post-match review for the... Actually, I think I might just miss that bit off the recording, so start again. Hello and welcome to the post-match review of the Crusaders versus Highlanders quarter-final in Super Rugby 2017. Yes, we are at the interesting part of the season after a lot of games, which we were pretty easy to call, let's be honest. If you're listening to the podcast, please do subscribe. And tell all your friends. If you're watching this on YouTube, obviously give it the old thumbs up and subscribe to the channel as well. This evening, I am joined by none other than real Michael Pullman. How are you doing, sir?
Yeah, I'm still waking up from that game.
Here I am coming bursting onto the scene with energy, and we have the man waking up with his mega gulp drink, Sugar Rush, to keep him going. Don't worry, I've got I've been on my Whittaker's LMP chocolate. There we go. Love this stuff. And as you've just seen, as he's popped up before he's been introduced, rude as always. good evening, Cornflake. How are you doing?
I'm very good, thanks. And just to fit in, product placement, Red Bull, if you want to get in touch, I'm available for offers.
Oh dear, right then. I think we're here to talk about rugby rather than product placements, but Rebel Sport, hey, we'd like some rugby shirts. No, talking about some good evening, Christian, who is on the live chat. Good to see you there. So let's kick on with the rugby. So I guess the first point to talk about is the weather, and being our man kind of on the ground, i.e. in the South Island, how was it down there? How is it down there?
Well, for me, it's lovely. There's very little rain down here in the southernmost part of the South Island. It's quite nice, so I'm not complaining. Everyone else north of me has got all the bad weather, so thanks for that. I could still do everything I need to do quite nicely. But as for the match, which we're here to talk about, it was atrocious, wasn't it? You mentioned before that the places were in a state of emergency and people were getting evacuated on boats and it was all going on out there. So, you know, rugby kind of takes a back seat to that sort of thing normally, but it did make for a pretty sloppy, error-ridden, forward-dominated sort of match, which some people call boring. Other people sit there and just absorb themselves in it.
And you're forgetting we have a global audience here. We all know the states of emergency is going on. So the Highlanders, who come from Dunedin, the mayor there has declared a state of emergency for flooding, and the Highlanders' flights got delayed and they were a day coming up. There is also a state of emergency for flooding in Christchurch as well. So there were a lot of people wondering whether this game would even take place or whether it get postponed. But yes, it did, and it was torrential rain, as we say. Now, so as you say, let's get on with the game. Sloppy, error-ridden. And Mike, what was your take on the yellow card early doors?
It's the law. And, you know, as much as we can complain about it, it is the law. And but I certainly think that Cornflake's tweet really wraps it up. You know, in a couple of years, we're going to be... don't get me started, mate. I mean, Liam Squire went in, he had intent. I don't think he had intent to actually hit around the head. And he couldn't pull out, you know, at the end of the day. And, yeah.
Short people are going to dominate rugby. That's what it was all about. It's a bit silly, isn't it? It's like he didn't hit him on the head. He hit him on the shoulder and he wrapped around and the guy was falling over and he hit him on the back of the head. I mean, that was so soft. It was so soft. It's like, what are we going to get next? You know, if someone comes on, give someone a pat on the back of the head and say, you stuffed up, buddy, they're going to get a yellow card for that soon. You know, it's just silly. Someone's going to go into a ruck and he's going to feather his little hair on his front of his... fringe. I mean, God, how soft do you have to be? I can understand if he hit him first up with the arm on the head, then sure, but God, it's getting a bit pedantic, and don't even start me on that referee because he didn't have a clue what he was refereeing. He should have just gone home and someone else should have taken over. The referee's got to have this.
That's right. You can rant about the referee, but I'm going to give my opinion about the tackle first before we get into this. So I think he went in with the shoulder. And wasn't wrapping the shoulder and a swinging arm. Now, if he'd gone in with a shoulder with proper tackle, proper wrap, he wouldn't have slid up. He wouldn't have taken off. He wouldn't have hit the player's head. So I think it's poor technique, personally. And he deserves what he gets because it was poor technique. He would have been got for either a shoulder bulge because there's no wrap, or would have been got for a swinging arm. Either way, so I think there were a number of problems with the technique of the tackle that led to him hitting the head, and off he went. So whilst yes, I can see it being a soft penalty because he was the second tackler in, the player was going down. Yeah. That I get is a bit harsh, but I think he if he'd had good technique, he wouldn't have gone off. Yeah. He would have been. Yeah. But that, to me, that's where the problem was.
Yeah, I totally agree, actually, with that. I mean, these players know the law, and, in a quarterfinal, well, in any match, but in that situation, you know, yes, you need to. For someone with Squire's ability and experience, yeah, fair point.
Yeah, I think he had a poor game overall. There was another, I can remember a couple of infringements he made. I don't think he coped with the situation, had a particularly good game. And talking of poor games in that first half, we're going to start off with the Highlanders and their kicking. Eh? What were they doing today?
I think they started off quite good. That first little thing where they put in two little kicks right at the start, put them on the ground, the ball moved around, it slipped all over the place. That was good. It was a promising sign. I thought they stuck with that. Would have worked well for them, but they went away from that pretty much straight away. And they just didn't seem to have, in the first half, they didn't have the possession or the territory to really do anything. And when they did get it, they just didn't seem to win the kicking duel. They didn't have, the Crusaders used Israel Dagg very well throughout the game. He didn't do much apart from kick, but we know what sort of kick he's got. And that really perfectly situated his game for the Crusaders. So I think the Highlanders didn't have the game plan. You could say they're out-coached again. We seem to say it all the time with the Crusaders. And they just didn't seem to change. They just kept on hammering on the same plan and didn't look for a plan B to mix things up at all.
Yeah, no plan B for the whole 80 minutes. And I think that we saw an example tonight of a team that wasn't great in the Crusaders tonight. But, I mean, they adapted better to the conditions, and they actually, I felt that they improved as the game went on, and the Highlanders just got worse and worse and worse. Never really got into the game, and a lot of people are saying, oh, they did better in the second half. I don't think so. The game was gone at half time.
I'm not sure the game was gone at half time, but I thought when the game was gone, when the Highlanders got into the Crusaders 22 in that second half, had 10 phases and coughed the ball up. That's when I thought, yep, the game is now over. That was like about 60 minutes in, and they hadn't scored any points. They really needed to come away with a try at that point. They were still within three converted tries at that point of winning the game. So they needed to get that. So I disagree on that one. I think whilst they were a long way out of it, and it would take a lot to come back, I don't think they were out of it until about the hour mark. But
never good vibes from the Highlanders tonight. You know, I don't. They just never looked really like they were going to match the Crusaders in any aspect of the game. I don't think.
No, and we should talk about some other aspects. Yeah. So for me, the problem with the Highlanders kicking in that first half was there was always a red jersey underneath it catching it. And it was uncontested. They were kicking too long, they were either kicking not long enough or too long, because it was either not over the head of the player and hitting grass, or there was no the chase wasn't contesting the ball, and so they never got the ball back from those. They always the Crusaders always had time to do something with the ball when they received it, and that's why the Crusaders won the kicking duel. The other areas that obviously it's a wet night. We always talk about forwards. And the Highlanders at the scrum really struggled all evening. They held up a few scrums, but on the whole, they never troubled the Crusaders' scrum.
The Highlanders struggled in the set piece just everywhere. Their line-out wasn't good. Their scrum wasn't good. They seemed a bit directionless. I think they seemed a bit lost with what to do. Like I said before, they'd come off that kickoff, and it's like they had their plan to go low and to keep it on the ground. But then that's where the plan seemed to have stopped, and they didn't seem to have anything else after that. And yet, once they lose the set piece and their forwards, although neither side played amazingly, but given the weather, they didn't win that forward battle. Their key players in the forward pack didn't have the greatest game, and it just snowballed really from there, I think.
Yeah, and also, I know we're talking about, and we will going forward about different bits of the game, but to me, some of the leaders in this Highlanders team were not there tonight. Aaron Smith was sucking the hollow. Some of the forwards were terrible. Liam Squire, probably the worst. Daniel Leonard Brown. I mean, God, like, we're gonna talk about the conditions, all right? But please, come on now.
So, yeah, there were silly mistakes. I mean, we had Daniel Leonard Brown was barged into a kicker, giving up an easy penalty. He got lucky because the Crusaders, let's see, Richard Mwanga tonight had a shocker from the kicking tee and missed and left a whole bunch of points out there, let's be honest. Whereas I don't think the Highlanders didn't have a shot at goal all night. So it could have been a much bigger margin. And as you say, Daniel Brown, shocking decision. Coltman was hooked in the first half, was substituted in it. So Coltman's the hooker for the Highlanders. His throwing was off, as we've already mentioned, the set piece, the lineout wasn't working. He also gave away at least two silly penalties that I could think of in that first half as well. And the discipline from the Highlanders wasn't there either. So, A, they were kicking straight to the Crusaders. B, they were losing out on the set piece. And C, they were losing out on the discipline, which just meant they spent the whole of the first half in their own half, pretty much in their own 22.
Yeah.
Sorry, three hearts come back from that, really.
Nothing to say. On the flip side, we're going to talk about how bad the Highlanders have been, but the Crusaders on the flip side played the conditions perfectly.
Kieran Reid, you know, he got for a ton of work tonight, and there were a couple of instances there where it was a bit questionable, but yeah, he really led tonight, and so did Whitelock as well. I thought they were, obviously they always are, you know, the two key factors in that forward pack.
There was an interesting comment I read on Twitter that you can make what you want of, but it said that the Highlanders possibly got a bit soft since they're playing under a roof so often this season.
I think that's valid, actually. You know, these are professional rugby players, and they played like schoolboys today.
Now, okay, I won't say I understand where that person was coming from, because that was a reply to one of my tweets and the follow-on tweets. They haven't gone soft, but what they have gone is they don't know how to play in wet conditions because they're playing under the roof the whole time. The players were still putting their bodies on the line. They were still trying.
For sure, yeah.
But, yeah. So it wasn't that they were soft as in not making an effort or not being physical. It was soft as in their playing style was all wrong, and they didn't know how to cope with the conditions.
Not used to playing in those conditions, yeah.
Exactly. And so we talked about the Highlanders always kicking to a player. The difference was the Crusaders, the ball always found the grass. The number of times the Crusaders kick bounced was unreal, and that meant that the Highlanders player was always under pressure when doing his returning kick, and that meant they lost the kicking job. And so they spent the whole time in their own half. And whenever they got the ball, because you're in your own 22, you kick to exit and they kick the ball away. I guess the big thing is, and actually I forgot to bring up the stats for first half possession, but I think it was something like 80% possession, 80% territory to the Crusaders, and they were only 17 points ahead.
Yeah, 72 and 80, I read, that it was to the Crusaders in the first half. But I think the main reason they put that down to is just the options they had. I mentioned the players that they had to do the kicking duels, but when they've got likes of Dag, which you already mentioned, they've got Mwanga in there that can do a job. Whereas the Highlanders, on the other hand, it was all just going through Sopawanga mainly. And it's a bit easier to predict, and that's what they kind of become as the game wore on, a bit more predictable in how they're going to play, how they're going to kick, where they went to. And when you've only got one man to do it, they change pretty quickly to bring Marty Banks on in the second half, which didn't really make much difference in the end, really, to them. But probably saying they should have thought of from the start, given those conditions. But really, the Crusaders had more options, and they had you can argue better options to do it as well.
Yeah, and I think there was a bit of talk during the week about the Highlanders probably being one of the stronger examples in New Zealand of a side that relies on its All Blacks. And that showed tonight, and I think Sopoanga just wasn't effective. And yes, he didn't get a shot on goal, but his playmaking was average, and that's not going to really do his chances, I guess, versus Moanga in terms of that All Black selection any good.
But you looked at that whole match, and the weird thing I just noted down quickly is that there was very little mention of any backs that couldn't kick. Like the Highlanders will go Ben Smith, Sopoanga, Boot, Dag, Moanga, kick. Havili got a mention. But there was no mention of Thompson or Fikatoa, of just about anyone else in either side's backline, really. So that was key, and it's those key names that were mentioned. So pretty hard to be too effective for those guys, but it's key men and key positions that did the job better.
It is. Ryan Quatty, another name, did a lot of defensive work, a lot of organisation, but didn't get mentioned much. And I do think, I was thinking during the game that having seen this game, I think the last game I saw Sopoanga wasn't great. I think he is I don't think he'll be adding many more All Black caps to his tally.
That's harsh.
Maybe it is. But you've got Damian McKenzie coming through, who'll be playing at 10 all next season. Black is getting his opportunity in Auckland at 10 next season. If either of those two can crack on, they could come in and be the third choice. And if Moanga gets ahead of Sopoanga, then Sopoanga is basically suddenly falling down the list. I wasn't impressed by him, and I think his kicking tonight and tactical play just wasn't the level that you need to be for an All Black.
That's fair enough. We still got to pick three. I definitely think, like you talk about the All Blacks and like the Lions, we talk about it quite a lot, is the consistency of selection. And they have stuck with Sopoanga for quite a long time. So I'd be surprised, it's hard to see Otiri Black really going to All Black level over the next season. But sure, Moanga's got to be in the picture now that there's no Cruden, Barrett, McKenzie in the mix. But what we've seen in McKenzie at 10, he really struggled up to that level for the Māori All Blacks, but he's got a whole season. Do we see any of those guys, Moanga or McKenzie at 10 on the end of your tour? Could be an interesting fact as well for the All Blacks.
Fikatoa, does this...
He's gone. Leaving. Forget about it.
He's leaving. Don't worry about it. But my God, this guy didn't look like he wanted to be there tonight. Played dumb rugby, as he has for the last 12 months, and it's disappointing to see him go out like that in terms of his, New Zealand rugby career.
Yes, it is. I'd agree on the dumb rugby bit. I'm not sure I'd agree on the not wanting to be there bit. I think he put the effort in, but just wasn't very, very well-directioned effort, really. Mm-hmm. I agree on the dumb bit. So we got to half-time. 17-0. I guess we probably should quickly talk about the tries, because are they? Because that's at least one of them was controversial. The first try, it looked short, and then somehow he ended up on the line, and Gardner didn't go upstairs.
Double movement.
What do you say? I said it earlier. That ref just waited for someone else to make the decision for him. He just waited, someone else said, it looks all right, or, we've seen the ball, who cares how it got there? I wasn't impressed by his performance here tonight at all.
There was that one, and then the held-up try, so the maul for all day looked like they went over the line, and it was down. And then he even went to the TMO, TMO's like, or they went, looked around, signaled a try, then the assistant ref came in and said, actually, I think that might have been held up. And then, as we have with a lot of these mauls, you can't see anything from camera angles because there's just too many bodies. So who knows what happened in there. In the old days, that was a try every day of the week. In the new days, we got unlucky. So there were a number of refereeing decisions there. Perhaps they got one they shouldn't have done, and perhaps they got one taken away that they should have had. So I think things may have evened themselves up there.
Yeah. I don't think he was perfectly, he was selective to one side or the other. He was just bad all round. He just made bad decisions. He just left responsibility to everyone else and just looked lost, like a lost little puppy running around out there, falling over in the mud. You're surprised he didn't go jumping in the puddles in the corner.
Yeah, you know, I think it was Kieran Reid's try. It was a double movement. There was trickery going on the ground. And for him to not even... Awards the try, Ben Smith comes running over and says, "What the hell are you doing? Aren't you going to look at that?" No, I've seen enough. You haven't seen anything, mate. You know? Give me a break.
It's good not to be the only one hating on a referee. It's good.
And I think he's
one of my favourite referees. I think he's a good referee, but
he normally is pretty good.
What's the referee's dog tonight?
Yeah, it's strange. I thought he was normally pretty good as well, but he was just lost. He was on another planet.
For me, he was a bit too pally to some of the players as well. I think he needs to be a bit more authoritative. But that's just that's what I like to see from a ref. I remember at one point hearing the front rows going, "Good call," and you're just like,
"You know,
call, Angus." And you're like, hang on, both sets of front rows are both telling you you've made a good call. You know there's something going wrong there. I don't like the players telling the ref giving the ref a quick slap on the back and saying, "Yeah, well done, mate." No, that's not how this works. Calling the players mate too much. No, mate, you're the boss. Stop calling people mate. Maybe even don't even bother using their first name. Give them their surnames. Be a school teacher. Let them know who's in charge.
Or their numbers. Just call them number six or whatever.
Number six, yep.
Yep. Put down the law. You're right. I agree 100% with what you say there, yeah.
Has Nigel Owens ever done a Super Rugby?
No.
My memory is short. Man, that would be good.
Oh, dear. And as we're going to talk about this sort of stuff, one of the things he said early on to Aaron Smith was, "Stop shouting at me." If someone's shouting at you, just yellow card them, get rid of them. And he was just like, you had Aaron Smith all the time saying, "Whoa," flapping around like this behind the rug. My favorite tweet I did tonight was, "What kind of bird is Aaron Smith trying to be tonight?" Because it was a bit too much going on there.
But that's his style of play, isn't it? He's very passionate. He's very loud. He really. What's the word to use? But encourages his forwards, I guess you could say, but he really does lay down the law to his team. And he's a leader to that side completely. Good or bad day, that's something he never drops on.
No, and that was good. And I do like that. What I don't like is players appealing for stuff rather than getting on and playing the game.
But that's a scrum half, isn't it? For years, decades. It's just the thing.
They are. It was just a bit too over the top for me. I thought his flapping arms was a bit like, another player like just Faf de Klerk. And when I first saw Faf, I loved his clapping. I loved that he clap all the time and geez. Then after a while, it got like, does he have to do it every single play? I mean, and clapping's trying to get the ref's attention. Yep, no, I had enough of that. So, second half, it was much more even. How did the Highlanders turn it around?
They had a bit more ball, they had a bit more time to do stuff, but they didn't look like they were ever going to do anything too exciting. They never really made too many incisions. If they ever got a chance, it was always off an advantage that the Crusaders threw a bit of caution to the wind. They were a bit lost as well in the second half. A little bit more ball, but they didn't know what to do with it. And the Crusaders just went in defensive mode, I guess. They knew they just could protect that lead in that weather. Rely on the kicking and do what they did in the first half, but not worry about scoring too many points if they didn't have the chances.
Yeah, I think the Highlanders probably, yes, it's a weak game, but they probably kicked a bit too much in that second half. When they did have opportunities to move the ball, I think they rushed it a bit, probably panicked. But to be fair, by 60 minutes, I was editing other articles for Last Word on rugby, so... can't really talk much about that last 20.
Oh, dear me. I thought they held on to the ball a bit more, which meant they actually got the ball a bit more rather than just kicking it away the whole time. Just on the kicking stats, and because this blows my mind, the Crusaders kicked from hand 50 times in that game. Oh. And the Highlanders kicked from hand 45 times, which is unreal. That's more than a kick a minute during that game, which I'm not sure, but I can't remember the last time I've seen numbers quite that, oh, well, that high. So there was a lot of kicks from that. I think they held on to a bit more. The kicking was a bit better. Marley Banks came on and had a mixed bag, but some of the kicks were good, whereas in the first half, all the kicks were bad. The lineouts still continued to not function very well. According to the stats here, they lost four lineouts, and it says they only lost one of their scrums, but to me, that scrum was going backwards most of the night.
It was a bit reflective on how the game played, really, wasn't it? Like, the first half was all Crusaders, and the Highlanders was just getting out of their own 22 as much as they could. Any time they got the ball, they were pretty much 10 metres out from their own line. They said to get rid of it. The second half was almost opposite, whereas the Crusaders were just happy to play territory and keep them out more than actually desperately trying to keep out. Their defence was trusted, and the Highlanders just made too many mistakes. So you couldn't do much else, really. I think both teams realised that before they went on the field, that you're not going to do an 80-metre runaway try with offloads like Sonny Bill getting ascended from the Blues to the Highlanders or the Crusaders. There's going to be none of that stuff throughout that game.
Just I thought I saw it at the start of the game, Jack Goodhue having a chuck on the field, and Twitter has confirmed it for me. So.
Oh, yes. I didn't see that.
Really? Right. You get that nervous? My God.
Yep, Jack Goodhue, well, clearly, it's his first year in rugby. This is probably the biggest game he has ever played. And, yep, the nerves got the better of him in the first in the warm-up. So in that second half, I think they held on to it more, as you say. I don't think either team really broke the line that often, probably a handful between the two of them. And so I think for both teams, it was a matter of kicking until the opposition made a mistake, and then you got your field position. And I think basically the Highlanders made less mistakes in the second half than in the first half, and held on to it a bit more. Therefore, neither team really got much of an opportunity to score. Whereas in the first half, I don't think the Crusaders were that much changed their game plan that much in that second half.
No, they just kept doing the same thing. Then they just. What they knew how to do, what they knew was working. They're too clever. They got too many leaders. They got too many big name players, especially in the pack where that game was just built. And Kieran Reid said it when he went off at halftime. He just said they know what they got to do. They just need to keep doing it in the second half. And that's a hard thing to stop when you got a lead like that in conditions like that against a team so star-studded like that. It's hard for them to put it away.
But I did. There was a nice little play in the first half where both sides were basically playing one-out rugby to a pot of three forwards. But to me, the difference was the Crusaders. Normally, it was the first player who got the ball would take it up. But there were a couple of times where the first player would pass it on, the second player would pass it on. So you didn't know exactly which of those three was going to have it. Whereas the Highlanders, much more predictable. They were in an arrow formation. The guy at the head of the arrow took the ball. The other two pretty much latched onto him and trying to drive him forward before he was even tackled. And I think that was, to me, was a key differentiator between how predictable the two sides were at playing wet weather rugby.
Yeah, that comes down to just the game plan that they used. And interesting stat, I've been stat searching. You talked about line breaks before. The Crusaders actually made a few more clean breaks, they call it, clean breaks. They made 12. And I'm pretty sure the Highlanders only made about 6. So there you go. The backs were a little bit more effective for the Crusaders.
Wow. Because the stats I'm looking at have clean breaks 2 for the Crusaders and 3 for the Highlanders.
Do you? Well, yeah. We're looking at different websites. This is ESPN. It's trustworthy.
No, this is ESPN. maybe you're doing Defenders really? Beats or something. Yeah. Anyway. Cool. That's that way. We're pretty much at the end of our half-hour show. Any final points you want to make about this? Actually, we should say, who do you think they're going to be facing in the semi-finals now with the Stormers hosting the blank Chiefs?
I think it'll be a Crusaders Stormers semi. Just got a bad feeling about my Chiefs in a few hours. But thoughts, mate. You know, yes, the conditions. Yes, the delayed flight. everything was going against the Highlanders tonight, but that was one of their worst performances in this year, I reckon. And yeah, you know, well done, Crusaders. Good team on the night.
Indeed. I'm still going to go to Stormers. I just think the home advantage and that's going to do it for the Stormers, and Chiefs haven't been too convincing. It's a tough one to pick, and I wouldn't be surprised if either side comes back to play the Crusaders, but I think it will be their last match regardless of which team comes back here. So, yeah, I'm going to go Stormers, pretty close, under 5 points sort of thing, 2 points, 3 points. But hopefully there won't be a waterlogged pitch.
So, yeah, I think we've covered most of the game. Me, I think the Chiefs are going to come back and play the Crusaders for an all-New Zealand semi-final. So I'll go against the grain of my fellow commentators, pundits, whatever you want to call yourselves. And to wrap up then, Mike, where can people find you and have a chat?
Cool. So you can find me on Twitter at RealMikePullman. And you can also go to lastwordonrugby.com for some of the better rugby coverage. We all turn it. We will.
Everyone's full of the plugs tonight, aren't they?
They are full of the plugs tonight. Come on, Steve, take us away. Where can people find you?
Same place as always. Cornflakes Crib. You can find me on Twitter and on YouTube. You can find all your rugby requirements, games, expert opinions, myself included, and all the guests you can need as well. So we're going to have plenty more coming up. We have some big Super Rugby semi-final picks coming up next week as well. So get involved with them. We have this old mug driving them all on here as well. Hopefully, saying your picks for semi-final. So you'll find me there. Cornflake, that's all you need to know.
Cool. And I am obviously at Driving Maul on Twitter. Do please subscribe to the YouTube channel or the podcast channel, however you're watching or listening to this. I will be back on Tuesday night at 8 p.m. New Zealand time with these two guys and a couple more for Hash Rugby Chat, where we'll cover the top five hot topics in rugby. And obviously you can give your input to that as well on Twitter and also through YouTube as well. So do join us for that. I will be back hopefully next week. Well, I will be back next week with a post-game review of the Crusaders game, whoever they are playing. And maybe if the Sharks beat the Lions, then I may also be doing a Hurricanes versus Sharks one as well. But if the Lions win, I'm sorry, I'm not doing it at 3 o'clock in the morning. That's just not on.
I think there's as much chance of that happening as Red Bull giving me a call later on tonight.
No, but hey, I may be getting Hardy's wine on board. You never know after that wonderful tweet from earlier. So clearly all sponsors are welcome. Thank you very much for joining us, everybody. We will be back, as I say, on Tuesday and also next weekend for live reviews.